Radio Reverb, Brighton Festival 2017. Now, all of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2017 with Melita Dennett on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melita Dennett. This is indeed Radio Reverb's Brighton Festival special.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals. And we're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeated at 10pm and 8am. And for the next 2 weeks, we'll be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, the creators and the people who make it happen.
And on today's programme, we're going to be meeting a group of dance performers with a difference, looking at some of the classical music events coming up in the festival, hearing how poetry, politics and the personal collide, and we'll be casting our eye over what's happening at the festival at the moment. That's all in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, kindly supported by the Brighton Festival. Starting the programme now, some Brighton music. This is Money for My Teeth and Komodo. From Brighton, that's Money for My Teeth, who is allegedly a Komodo baby. You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special show. We're here with you Monday to Friday, live between 5 and 6. Then there's a Saturday morning show as well, and we're repeated 10 o'clock Monday to Friday and then at 8am the following day. And there's also a podcast, so really you can't miss us. We're all over the blooming place like a rash, and we're giving you the inside track on what's happening in the Brighton Festival.
Now, what we can't do is tell you where exactly you'll find a magic moment. Now, by that, I mean that kind of moment when you walk into a gallery or someone starts singing something or you see a piece of theatre that just reaches inside you and makes your soul leap.
It makes you go...
It's a magic moment.
It's a magic moment.
And I think Kate Tempest, the director, is sort of really quite keen on everyone getting out there and finding a magic moment this year. She's quoted as saying, "When you find a piece of artwork on your own terms, that's when the real magic happens. The most exhilarating moments that have brought me closest to myself and closest to my fellow human beings have been through gathering and watching and feeling and participating in works of art. So please go and see as much as you can. Approach it like an epic, like you are a pilgrim on a quest. And some things may well happen in the theatre, the community centre, the concerts hall that will smash you back to feeling and land you in your skin again."
Wow, that's a big ask, but it happens.
Yeah, that's Kate Tempest's ask, and it got me wondering as to what moments had smashed you back to feeling and landed in your skin again, and me, what had happened to me to done that? Have you got anything that landed you back in your skin again?
I've got some things that took me out of my skin, which was actually quite nice as well. And actually, we would like to hear from you. So if you send us a tweet to Radio Reverb, let us know what your magic moments are. Then we will certainly read them out on air. And if we can't read them out on air because they're too rude, they are artistic and cultural ones, not what you did under the pier when you were drunk. If we can't read them out, then we will certainly have a good chuckle at them. I have to do a bit of a humble brag because I did see David Bowie in 1973 at Brighton Dome, and that was like a shiver moment. That was unmatchable.
I feel like throwing mine away now.
Yeah, go on.
It's like my magic moment. No, well, because actually it's a unique thing. And as I said, what we can't say when we're here saying I love that piece or go and see that, it's great, is know how anyone else will respond to it.
Yes.
Because it's such an individual experience.
Yeah, the subjectivity is great. Otherwise, we'd all like One Direction, wouldn't we? I know you do.
God, oh dear, I don't know what to say to that. You've silenced me. Shall I tell you about why I've chosen to sort of force feed everyone with one of my magic moments?
Yeah, go on then, yeah.
Bits of music. I'm not really a live music person. It's not...
Sucking of intake of breath.
I know. So I say that and then I go and enjoy live music when people say you're like this. So, you know, hey, what can I say? I'm the same with dance. I don't really like dance. I go and see dance. I love it. But I went to Latitude Festival. It was 2010. And I was popping along seeing the theatre stuff and some readings and literature and whatever round. And the people I was with say, you have to, I think you'll like Jonzi or Jonzi. My Icelandic's not too good. And I was like, okay, I'll go along. Glorious sunny day, the sun has setting outside, go into this marquee, strange man appears on stage wearing feathers and feathers and feathers and just sort of perambulating around, and the lighting was amazing, you could see the sun coming in and this haunting music begins. His haunting voice, which will come in shortly, came in, and the shivers, as you can see.
Now. Oh, she is. Oh, she's got all goggy. Oh, it's not a pretty sight.
This was my magic moment. Let's hear John's in.
Seriously, she is really doing this. She really did have those goose pimples. It was terrifying. Live goose pimples on radio.
It's the memory. I mean, it really does take me back hearing this. It's so emotional for me, imagining and remembering what it was like, and it touches me. So it is a magic moment. And do you want to sort of share any of yours to inspire other people to...
Well, actually, I've been thinking about some of the magic moments I've had in Brighton Festival. I have to say, I'm still reeling from Shirley Collins on Sunday night, which was one of those very, very, very special events. But I was thinking back to Cat's Eyes doing the Duke of Burgundy live soundtrack in 2015. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
no.
Well, it's a great film. Do you know the film?
No, I don't.
Check it out. I think you might like it. It's quite a surreal and magical film, and it was just one of those moments where the live soundtrack. I love live soundtrack to film anyway. Absolutely stunning piece of performance there at Brighton Dome. Back in 2012, Live Transmission, which was a reworking of Joy Division tracks by Scanner, the Heritage Orchestra, and visual artist Matt Watkins.
That sold out before I could get a ticket.
Did it? Oh well, you missed a cracker there. So I love Joy Division. I saw them as well. More bragging rights. To hear Joy Division reworked in that way with a whole kind of visual experience was stunning as well. And back in 2011, back in the midst of time, this is one that people still talk about, actually, at the Brighton Festival, Fabrica, Thomas Tallis's 40-part motet, which was 40 speakers around the room, and you could hear all the different... Did you see it?
Yes,
you
I did.
It?
That was amazing. You walked in, and it was like the choir were all around you, but you went and stood next to different individual members of the choir, because the speaker was each voice around the room. It was stunning, yeah.
It was absolutely gorgeous. So that was one of those Brighton Festival magical moments.
Well, we want to sort of hear your magical moments. They might be from Brighton Festival, but generally how something... to do with art, to do with culture that has surprised you and just grabbed you. And it doesn't have to be music, it can be art. I went to a gallery in Sitges, which blew me away a couple of months ago. Unbelievable. Again, I was almost crying, and Melita probably would have laughed at my goosebumps again. But do get in touch. You can tweet.
At Radio Reverb. And I suppose we ought to invent a hashtag, shouldn't we? Magic moments. But if you tweet something random, we're going to know it's from you anyway. So there
exactly.
You go.
Exactly.
Right, well, let's put the goosebumps away. I don't know, the goosebumps may return actually for this, because as ever, classical music forms an important part of the Brighton Festival. From lunchtime concerts to the usual epic festival closer, there's always a range of music to choose from. I went to the Theatre Royal earlier to meet Jill Kay. She programmes the festival's classical programme.
We've had a fantastic start to the festival. Our opening concert with Chinike, which is the Black Minority Ethnic Orchestra, pretty new orchestra, very young players. It was a complete sellout. Was just the most wonderful concert. Very young players, so not experienced at playing in an orchestral setting very much, but really amazing, really enthusiastic. The standard of the playing was really phenomenal. Young soloist Sheku Kanamason, who appeared on Britain's Got Talent with his entire family, but he's really going places now. He's just 17, played a Haydn cello concerto, which even, you know, hardened cello soloists, you know, renowned players kind of balk a bit at the Haydn. It's really hard. He just sat and played it as if it was a, you know, walk in the park. Lovely, lovely player. All of them just lovely, all looking at each other when they were playing. Really lovely atmosphere. So a fantastic start. We've had two recitals in Glyndebourne after Sunday afternoons. Both have been sold out. Very different. E. Fagiolini doing the first of our Monteverdi concerts this year. Absolutely lovely. Lots of moving around and singing, sackbuts and cornets and all sorts of things. That was lovely.
We're sitting in the stalls at the Theatre Royal, and the stage is set with a grand piano, so I guess there's something coming up here.
Yesterday is Tyler Hay, who is a young prize winner, one of the young award winners in our lunchtime series. He's going to play some Liszt and some Chopin and some Haydn. He's just about to arrive and start rehearsing, so we may hear some warming up in the background. But the Theatre Royal is such an atmospheric building. It's really great to be doing some lunchtimes here.
The theme this year from Kate Tempest is the Everyday Epic. Does that fit at all into the classical music programme this year?
I have to be honest, it's been quite hard to fit a classical programme around Kate's themes and ideas. But she's been to some programming meetings, and we really, you know, we're probably the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
We're quite a lot older than she is. But she's great. We had a really good chat about it. And what we could do in classical music, she's so influenced by words and text and poetry and so on. So what we've done with a lot of the classical music is we've allowed ourselves to be sort of driven by words and poetry and text. So, of course, the two song recitals are very heavily based on that. This concert coming up this Sunday in the Dome, Les Talons Lyriques, it's the second of our Monteverdi concerts, and it's all about the texts, some really beautiful Monteverdi-led texts. And our closing concert, which is probably the one we really focused around Kate, is all driven by speeches. So Lincoln Portraits was written in 1942 and was inspired by a speech by Henry Joe Wallace, who was the vice president in the States at the time. John Adams' Harmonium, this massive choral piece, really massive choral piece in the second half, is using all the poetry by Emily, not all of it, some of the poetry by Emily Dickinson and John Donne. So really word-driven programmes is how we're reflecting Kate, really.
And those closing events traditionally at the festival are always massive and definitely epic.
Definitely epic. This one is definitely epic. I mean, John Adams' Harmonium has got a huge orchestra. I think we've got something like 90 players. There is an absolute bank of percussion. So anybody thinks they might be going to sleep in this concert? They're certainly not. We've got synthesizers, celestes, pianos, harps, and a full, a very big orchestra with wind and brass, and our own Brighton Festival Chorus, of course. There's going to be about 145 of them on stage. So pretty much 250 musicians. And in the score, when you look at the score, John Adams writes for people to play and sing as loud as they possibly can. And, you know, in the Dome, 250 people kind of really going at it. It's really going to be epic.
I, for one, am looking forward to that one. That was Jill Kay. She programmes the festival's classical programme. And if you want to catch up with the full programme of the classical music and everything else that's on at the festival, the place to go is the website brightonfestival.org, or pick up a brochure around town. More Brighton music now. New track from Brighton's 18-year-old electronic down-tempo performer. This is La Lune, and the track is Bathe. More great music coming out of Brighton. That is La Lune, new track from her. That's Bathe. You listen to the Brighton Festival special on Radio Revo with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. And this afternoon, I went down to Lighthouse to, I actually got a little personal sneaky preview of Collisions.
Heard good things about this.
I was reeling from it. It's a 15-minute virtual reality film. So if you've never done virtual reality before, you put on a headset and earphones, so effectively your sight and your sound is entirely within this world, and it's 360 degrees, and you look around you everywhere you go. And it's set in the Australian outback, and it's based around the recollection of a British nuclear test out there. And the story is about the narrative. It's not exactly a narrative, but, you know, the point of it is about the care for the land that the Indigenous Australian people had, and then British government comes bang and bombs. But there's a particular point in it. I mean, a lot of it leaves you quite vertiginous, because a lot of it is filmed from very high up, and you're looking down, and you obviously can't see your feet, but you're looking down at the ground, and you're flying across the outback. There's one part where the atomic bomb goes off, and you look up and you flinch. I'm not. This is not a spoiler. It won't spoil it for you, because you actually have to be there to experience. But it makes you flinch as you see the particles from the bomb coming down. And it's, if you like kangaroos as well, it'll make you feel quite sad. Stunning experience. Absolutely. And Rebecca, you must go to it. You must go.
No, when you hinted that this had been great, and I had a friend who went and said exactly the same thing about it. So that's two votes saying amazing.
Yeah.
I had a look, and there's not that much availability left, I see. There is still some tickets, but not a great deal, because you have to book your slots on that, don't you?
Yeah. So it's a 15-minute slot. And to be honest, you know, 15 minutes is pretty much, it's fine. It's the limit, because, you know, A, it makes you disorientated being in that environment. But B, you know, just the whole, the impact of it.
Powerful.
It's stunning, yes, yeah.
And it's only a fiver.
So that is Collisions at Lighthouse. So definitely go, beg, steal, borrow a ticket, book up now.
And on a totally different level, one of the things I would have liked to have seen was The Unfair, which, you know, we've talked a lot about how dark festival is, and this looked like a way of releasing that darkness, but it ain't going to happen. Do you want to tell us what's happened?
Yeah, this is really annoying. We were looking at this in the programme, and I contacted The Unfair to say, oh, we'd love to come down and do a piece, we'll get you in the studio. It was to be a fair taking place down the New Steen this weekend, Friday through to Sunday, where effectively you get rid of your anger and you get rid of your tensions by going to the fair. And it sounds absolutely fascinating.
Lots of fair games and, you know, activities and stalls and let off a bit of steam, the whole family. But their idea of anger in the world and plenty to be angry about, well, they've got a good reason to be angry themselves, haven't they, the people behind The Unfair?
Yes, we got a message from them this afternoon to say that they were in Leeds and one of the two vans containing their installation was stolen. So they've lost it, which, I mean, it's absolutely gutting. You know, it's a rotten, rotten thing to do. What's someone going to do with a van full of fairground bits and bobs other than just kind of trash it, probably? So, sadly, The Unfair this weekend is not going to be happening, and they do say they hope to return to Brighton and the festival as soon as they can, but it ain't going to happen this time round. So if you want to check out what else is happening, obviously, over the Brighton Festival, then it is brightonfestival.org. But sadly, The Unfair is not going to be. In a few minutes' time, we're going to be talking about a dance performance with a difference. Before that, from Brighton, it's Muz Thing.
That's Brighton's Muz Thing with Welcome to the Sunset. Now, the arts should be social, not elitist. They should be part of everyday life. They should be in our communities, not only on elevated platforms or behind red velvet ropes. So says Brighton Festival guest director Kate Tempest. And last weekend, the festival teamed up with folk in Hangleton. This weekend, your place goes to the east of the city, and there's a diverse lineup of music, dance, theatre and spoken word on offer, with the participation of the Whitehawk communities. And delighted that we're joined in the studio by some of the performers taking part in an intergenerational dance piece. And we'll hear from the dancers in a moment. First, though, choreographer Jada Tank is here. Can you tell me how did you get involved with your place in East Brighton?
So basically, I've had my company now for about 5 years, and we've been performing at the Fringe Festival every year. And we more recently became interested in this idea with talks with Three Score Dance Company, the over 60s company in Brighton. And we've always been interested in creating a piece together, this intergenerational piece. It's something we've always wanted to do. And Three Score took the idea to the main festival and they were really interested to commission it. So that's how we kind of came about with this particular project.
So what kind of dance do you normally do? You normally do youth dance, do you?
Well, I have a professional dance company, and it's contemporary dance with an influence of traditional Turkish folk dance, which is the dance style of my heritage. So I trained out in Turkey, learning some of the traditional dance styles back in 2011-ish. And from that, when I came back to England, I thought this folk dance could really enrich contemporary dance and could really bring something to British audiences. And then more recently than that, I've then founded a youth company which kind of works in the same aspect, but it's for dancers aged 14 to 19, and they audition every year, so they come and kind of get a bit of a flavour of what it's like to be in a professional company and to go and do these performances.
Okay, and sitting next to you is Fove, and you're one of the dancers in that company.
Yeah.
How long have you been dancing?
I've been dancing with Jada for about 4 years, but kind of dance has always been kind of part of my life.
Since you were
a
nappy?
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got one of those little videos of you sort of toddling
definitely,
around.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how did you feel when the suggestion came of dancing in an intergenerational piece?
I was intrigued. I've never done anything like it before. I was very interested in what it would be like to work with people completely a different age from me.
Okay, hang on, I'm gonna question them, because a lot of us will jokingly say, well, I've been around when there's been dad dancing going on. So, and I'm going to bring in Ian, one of the dancers, in a moment, and you can come back at me on this. Don't worry, you'll have your chance. But did you have a sort of sense of like, oh, might be a bit dad dancing moment?
No, I didn't, because I knew that you guys are a company in yourselves, so you guys have been working as a dance company. So no dad dancing there, but also we'd be learning Jada's movement. So I think I was more interested to see how they'd adapt to that, because it took me a while to adapt to it. And
is there Turkish influence then in choreography?
Definitely.
Right. So yeah. Ian, bring you in now. So you're the Three Score Dance Company. Tell me a bit about that company and how you got involved with this piece.
We've been going for, it's our fifth year now, and this is our third time in the main festival. The last one was on the beach, and then before that we did something in the railway station.
Which one was it on the beach with the flying boxes? And was it that one or another one?
No, it was with wearing plastic macs on the hottest day in May. that our choreographer insisted on costume, and the costume was sticky plastic macs.
And dancing
on pebbles is also tough, I tell you.
It's a bit easier at Whitehawk this weekend.
Basketball court on the Manor Road will be a lot easier. And then before that, we did one in the station, the railway station, on various performances over a weekend. So, yes.
So whose suggestion was this for the Three Score Dance to get involved with Jada's company and the younger dancers?
Well, I think we surprised choreographers who come to us that we are pretty adventurous. We actually like doing different things. And the idea of an intergenerational piece had been floating around anyway. And we're keen on a kind of outreach approach. For instance, we have groups that go into, would you believe, old people's homes, helping them with movement and in a often more limited way. But the notion that anyone can move, anyone can dance, even if you're in a wheelchair, you can do stuff. So we've always had that kind of notion of connecting out, and of doing things in different sites and doing free performances, as well as the stuff that we do stuff at Sadler's Wells and other places. So we've always wanted to do things that are a bit different and a bit challenging.
Jada, how did you go about the choreography then for the piece, knowing the different physical abilities potentially of the people that you've got there?
Well, to be honest, I was really keen to not patronise the dancers at all. Some of these dancers have never trained before. They started a few years ago with Three Score. So I just went, as I would with my professional company, and created a very challenging piece with lots of movement. And I thought, if they don't take to it, I can always adapt at a later date. But they did, luckily. They just went in full force and were happy to take on the challenge. So actually, it worked out really well. And we are doing some pretty challenging choreography.
So it's I think it's about 20 minutes, isn't it, the piece?
Yeah.
So Ian, how challenging was it for you?
I enjoy it. I think occasionally we've had choreographers who take the opposite view to Jada and do, not exactly they're patronising, but they think, we're older. I mean, I'm 74. They kind of think, 74-year-olds, we can't move around. And I prefer to move. I like moving and I enjoy dance. I've only been involved with contemporary dance for the last 5 years and had no involvement with dance before, but I've enjoyed it. I mean, it's been great, and the professionals especially and the young people have been really fine. They've been really helpful and easy to work with.
So Feb, what's the story of the dance, without giving it away, to encourage people to come along and have a look at the weekend?
I think it's to challenge views that people might think, because you're older, you can't move. It's for everyone. We want everyone to see it.
Well, also that young people only dance in one way,
exactly.
I would suggest, as well.
Yeah,
equally.
The Turkish ritualistic traditional movement also coming to us as young people who are British. And I think it's to challenge those views and to show that everyone can move in a different way.
So, Jada, how are the tickets going, or is it sort of turn up at the door? What's
actually
happening?
Unticketed. You can turn up and it's free. We've had a lot of interest. So last week I had a professional dance show and the youth company had a show, and they were both sellouts. So all the people that missed out on that are definitely coming this weekend. So we've got a lot of interest for it. But luckily, because it's outside, we can kind of fill the grassy bank with audience members. So hopefully the more the merrier, really. We want lots of people there. So
tell us about the venue, Ian. Whereabouts in Whitehawk is this show?
This is the Manor Gym on Manor Road. So it's a bit out of the way, and we hope people are prepared to make the journey. But it's not too bad. You can get a number 1 or 1A bus, drops you at the bottom of Manor Road and walk up.
I live on that bus route. It's not out of the way at all.
No, exactly. So I mean, obviously, I live on the other side of Brighton. I'm one of the Hove people. So, it's a bit of a trek over that way. But we're just hoping that people will see it as an interesting opportunity for somebody that's free. And we're talking about, you know, really talented, amazing professionals in Jada's company. And people are getting a chance to see these people free who are superb performers.
And it's both Saturday and the Sunday afternoon. And are you looking forward to anything else going on at Whitehall? Because there is sort of a great variety of stuff going on up there over the weekend, I see.
Well, I know after our Saturday performance, Kate Tempest has an evening, so I managed to get the last 6 tickets for that were going.
All right, so that's,
we'll be staying,
that's sold
on,
out.
We'll be staying on for the Saturday
that's
evening.
That's just you boasting. No one else can go.
Hopefully there'll be other people there.
And you guys, are you going to be able to see anything else at Whitehall?
We hope so, yeah, and because I think it is. I mean, it's great that you can do stuff out in the open. I mean, I like these still what were labelled often site specific things within the festival. I think that's one of the joys of the festival.
What's your costume this time, though?
Well, it's a really nice costume, but if people want to see the costume, there is a really nice trailer that Cheda's boyfriend has produced, who is a really professional, and you can get it on either our, I think it's on our website, which is 3scoredance, or Cheda's website, and it'll give people an idea. And you can see the costume. I'm not going to describe it. Tell people to go look at it.
You won't be too hot, though, this time.
No plastic max.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to Jada, Ian and Fove, and their piece, 3scoredance, will be performed at the Managing Basketball Court this Saturday and Sunday at 4:15pm. Thank you very much.
Brighton Festival 2017. Radio Reverb, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
And if you're interested in what else is going on at Whitehawk this weekend, there's a PDF with the full programme details at the Brighton Festival website, which is brightonfestival.org. Lots and lots of events to pop into over the weekend. Most of them are free. Some, such as Kate Tempest's spoken word one, are ticketed. And really, you're going to have to beat somebody over the head to get a ticket for that, by the sounds of it. You listen to the Radio Reverb special on the Brighton Festival. Should it be the Brighton Festival special on Radio Reverb? Who knows? Anyway, this is Hayley Ross from Brighton, and the track is Barracuda. That's Brighton's Hayley Ross. Track is Barracuda. You listen to the Brighton Festival special on Radio Reverb live between 5 and 6, then repeated at 10 o'clock the same night, 8 a.m. the next morning. And there's loads and loads of podcasts. So if you follow us on Facebook and Twitter, you will find the podcast. So some individual interviews and some programmes as well up there on the podcast. And spoken word performer Luke Wright is performing at the Spire in Kemp Town on Friday. His show, The Toll, takes in flat roof pubs and half-bought couches of Brexit Britain.
Hello, my name's Luke Wright. I'm a poet and my show is called The Toll.
It sounds like a rather doomy title. I'm thinking Death Toll, For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's based on my second collection of the same name. And yeah, it is about the toll that life can take on you. But also, I don't want to paint a gloomy picture because it's first and foremost, it's a good night out, lots of laughter. And the show really is about finding those moments of joy and euphoria within the everyday toll of life.
We are living in times where it feels a little bit difficult sometimes to find joy and euphoria.
Yeah, I think it is if you let the news guide your mood. And I think some people do, but I think for most people, we're able to sort of hold in our heads the fact that, yeah, there's quite a gloomy prospect for the world out there, or things aren't going the way we'd like them to right now. However, there are, of course, lots of other moments of joy that we can take from our personal lives and our friends and, you know, just through the solidarity of opposing the things that we see wrong with the world. So, yeah, I think, yes, that, okay, there is. We do have a gloomy news cycle at the moment, but there's much to take heart in.
But you're a performer who doesn't shy away from politics.
Oh, no, not at all. No, a good chunk of my stuff's political. And if it's not overtly sort of party political, then I do always think there's some sort of social issue that I'm dealing with in my poems, yeah.
I was interested to see in one of your other performances, you were looking back at the Red Wedge movement from the 1980s of bands who were getting together actively to support the Labour Party at that time. Mm-hmm. So you had people like the Redskins, Style Council, those kind of things. What sparked your interest in that? Because obviously you would have been, like, probably not even born then when that was happening.
Yeah, I was born. I was born in 1982, so I was five.
You were titchy then.
Yeah, I was very little. Well, I was reading or rereading actually the last part of the John Harris book about Britpop and about this burning meeting between John Prescott and Damon Albarn. And one of the things Damon Albarn says to John Prescott, or if I get involved with New Labour or support you and stuff, it's not going to be like Red Wedge, is it? And I started researching Red Wedge and realised that actually the idea was that the coolness of the bands would rub off on the politics. But actually the utter untrustworthy uncoolness of the politics rubbed off on the bands, and actually it didn't sort of work in that way, or it seemed a bit sort of, so yeah, I knew obviously that they were doing this you know, the Jeremy Corbyn tour and stuff like that, and I was really interested in this idea of, you know, what the time when music and culture comes together to works with politics. But as is the way, you create a character to go into that world, and that character then takes you off in different sort of places. And so, yeah, I have written this play that's set in 1987 on a tour where they're being very political, and it's in the lead up to the 1987 election. But it's not really an examination of that so much as more a personal story of one young man's sort of quest for something to believe in.
Music now is probably the most apolitical it's been since 1950s, early 1960s. It seems to be falling to spoken word artists to fit into that gap at the moment.
Yeah, well, and that's good. But I mean, I think there's a limit to what you can do in a 3-minute poem. I mean, you can soapbox, but I mean, often when you soapbox, and I say there's someone who soapboxes frequently, but I mean, I think there's a limit to what you can convince, how you can change heart. You can't change hearts and minds. I think you can just sort of make people feel better about what they already think, which is good. I think there's a place for that. What's interesting with the longer pieces I've got, the sort of 60-minute pieces, is you are able to sort of tell more involved stories, and the politics can be sort of more lurking in the background. And I think that's how you win people over. I think what poetry can do is, It's best at emotion. So rather than it being a shouty, like, you must think this, it's better for winning people's hearts. And you can do that in a way that sort of brings politics into it. But I think it's more effective if it's not sort of too, you know, obvious and too didactic.
You are going to be speaking to an audience who I think will be on your side. And obviously Brighton and Hove was one of the places which voted most vehemently to remain. What happens when you take your work further afield? I mean, do you find that you end up with an audience who is broadly in agreement with you, or do you play to much more kind of mixed audiences?
I think I do play to more audiences, especially in the sticks. And I live in Bungay in North Suffolk. And Bungay in North
Great
Suffolk.
Name.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. You know, that's I mean, it's not a completely conservative sort of area, but it is certainly, I mean, and we've got a Tory MP, and there's definitely much more of a mix of people. So I don't live in a sort of, you know, a liberal left-wing bubble, really, other than the ones I do online, I guess. So, and I think the thing is, people, especially with satire, no one ever thinks, oh God, they're doing me, you know. They always think it's someone more extreme than them anyway. So I think it's great to be able to do my stuff to audiences who don't agree with me. I think that's what you should be doing. Otherwise, you are just screaming into the echo chamber.
What can people expect then for your show?
Well, there's about 10 poems in it. Some are stories, some are sort of funnier stuff. There's some quite extreme sort of like wordplay. I've got a poem in there about Ian Duncan Smith that only uses one type of vowel in the whole poem. I've got another single vowel poem in "you," which is a bit gross.
I saw the video for that. Performed in a toilet, which seemed appropriate.
Yeah, Burt Up Pub. Yeah. There's a video for that one. They can check that out. There's more poignant pieces and a little bit of, you know, and in between, I contextualise the poems, introduce them, tell little anecdotes, that sort of stuff. So there's a good mix of stuff. And what I always really want to do with my shows is make have people laughing really hard 1 minute and then sort of pull the rug from under their feet and you know, so just give them a full range of emotions. And I think that's something that poetry can do. And you know, when I first started out, I did the comedy circuit, and you know, I do like making people laugh, but I think this, you can just do more with poems.
And what does it mean to you to be performing in the Brighton Festival, obviously this year as well, Kate Tempest being the guest artistic director?
Yeah, well, I know Kate. I've known Kate for a long time, and so it's really great to see someone from our world up, you know, up there, you know, putting on a festival. It's great. It's always, you know, it's an honour to perform at the Brighton Festival, because it's just well, I mean, you can just tell by the size of venue you play and the amount of people that come in. You know, it's so well publicised. It's, you feel like you're really part of a big important thing. So, yeah, so that's nice. And I love Brighton. I really like it. I've got a lot of friends down here, so it's just great to be in town in May in beautiful weather. Well, hopefully, we hope will be beautiful weather. Yeah. Oh, England, heal my hackneyed heart. It's shot with guilt. And all those nights, I've shared it far too often, England. Bled it almost dry for eager eyes. Traded it for other hearts that turn to gristle in my grasp. Oh, nothing stirs this heart these days. The party tricks have left it sick. Oh, England, heal my hackneyed heart. Oh, England, heal my hackneyed heart. Show me clumps of pastel homes on hills. A couple holding hands in hail, or chalkstone words of love in Dorset fields. Give me roads the motor clings to, herons over tidal mud, or skinny kids on wild swims, that constable bucolic thing. Oh, England, heal my hackneyed heart. Oh, England, heal my hackneyed heart. Wash it in the North Sea foam. Wrap it up in honey dawn. Make poultices from April dusk and chicken soup from sleepy days until it leaps and bangs its cage, until it thumps me with its thud and gives me all the grief it should. Oh, England, heal my hackneyed heart.
That's Luke Wright, and he's going to be appearing at the Spire on Friday with his spoken word piece, The Toll.
Now, on yesterday's Brighton Festival special here on Radio Reverb, I had a word with Nick Sandiland, who brings his piece, The Hum, to the festival. Now, I hesitated because it's an app for your smartphone, but it is also half cinema, half reality, and it includes specially composed soundtrack. And you go along to different locations, and then, thanks to your app, you can experience the location in a different way than you normally would. Now, I tried this out today. I had went to a couple of locations on the station and actually thought it was a really interesting experience. But before I say any more on that, Holly Simpson and Alicia Theobald, our reporters, have hot-footed it into the studio, having downloaded the
They're
Hum.
Damp. They're very damp, it has to be said. It's damp-footed into the studio.
Caught in the rain. They've downloaded the app and they've given it a go. So tell us what you did and what's your first impressions.
We didn't go to all of it, we went to a few, and it just gives you a different way of thinking, and it's really strange because you don't think about how people walk, and then you've got this person in your ear going through every little detail about it, and then it really gets you thinking, and you have a completely different outlook, I think.
So tell us exactly what you do at a location.
Well, we went to one of them at the train station, and it was... It was at the photo booth, and you had to go and sit in the photo booth, and all you could see was a reflection, and it was very like you and the person talking, and it was very intimate, and I was a bit like, oh, this is really creepy, because it would be like, don't smile, look straight ahead, take your glasses off, and I was wearing my glasses at the time, and it was really freaky, and I was like, oh my gosh, he knows. They know everything.
Yeah, because I was with you, but... because I was listening as well, I didn't think I was with you. I obviously was aware other people were around me doing the same thing, but because I was so into listening to exactly what this man or this woman or whoever was saying, yeah, it was great.
So can you see a whole bunch of other people wandering around, obviously doing the same thing as well? You're getting the kind of feeling from them, like, where are they? What are they doing? They've just done what I just did.
We went to Tesco's, and as we were like watching the automatic doors open and shut, there was a guy that came up, and he was literally standing there, and we were like, we're obviously doing the same thing. And we had like a little weird eye contact moment.
Just a little moment.
And that's the point, because we've mentioned there the station, and there are the other locations are such as the doors at a supermarket, the escalator in a shopping centre. And I was fascinated by how it did really work for me, stood there with a voice in my ear and the music talking about a scene that I knew wasn't the scene they would exactly have seen when they wrote that script. But it worked, and your imagination comes in as well. So it's interesting how reality interplays with what they've given you as the sort of poetry or the story.
Yeah, I think that worked really effectively. Yeah. It was just really intimate, but yeah, we saw loads of people doing it. And there was one in the toilet as well, another really ordinary place that you don't really think much about when you go, but... yeah, I heard someone we spoke to at the event said that she found it really weird. She voiced some of the ones as well, so... Yeah, I think it's weird.
So that's The Hum, which you can download. It's free. And I would say, actually, it's a different way of wandering around Brighton. I think there's something like 15 locations where there's these recorded stories. And each time you do them, it'll be slightly different because what you're seeing and the people passing will be different. So it's very interesting.
So you actually managed to gather some audio from it and you've spoken to some people on it. Brilliant. And we're going to hear that on Friday's show. Is that right?
Yes.
Great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much to our reporters, Holly Simpson and Alicia Theobald, going to experience The Hum, and we'll hear their report on Friday. And a special thank you as well to Thameslink, who have been supporting our reporters.
So you have been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and myself, Rebecca Sandals, here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, DAB and online, Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, and we repeat at 10pm and 8am.
We will be testing you on that later. We're kindly supported by the Brighton Festival. Thank you very much to all our guests today, to our reporters Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson. On tomorrow's show, we've actually got a recording of the performance by the Furrow Collective that took place at the Dome on Monday. So that is tomorrow's show. So it's going to be a musical special. Put your feet up, have a nice cup of tea. Hopefully it won't be raining. But if it is, it's an excuse to stay in and listen to your radio. So from me, Melita Dennett, and from Rebecca Sandals,
goodbye.
Toodle pip. Going to play out with Brighton Sparrow. Bye.